Welcome back to the Cave of Solitude, your comic book and pop culture podcast, coming to you from the mega city metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and this is episode 92. Some more Fan Expo coverage coming your way. I hope you guys aren't getting tired of it yet, because this episode is a little different. Although I love being able to share some of the good convos from the panels that I attended that weekend and recorded them guerrilla style, mind you, I love being able to talk and hang out with creative people, and that's what we do this week. I have three interviews lined up for you with some awesome dudes who I was glad to meet up with and hang out and chat with at this year's show. And can I just say, maybe I'm biased, but Toronto is really leading the way when it comes to comic book culture and community. Whether it's artists that are working for the big two or on an indie level, we have such a wealth of talent in Southern Ontario. It's crazy. And I'm really enjoying being able to engage and contribute in some way. So having said that, first on the docket for this episode, we've got Shane Heron and Ricky Lima, the creative team behind the Black Hole Hunters Club. And I have a chat with them talking about their collaboration, their future projects to look out for, and we also get into a very passionate discussion about pastries. There's lots of fun, guys, and please stay tuned because I intend and hope to have both guys on the show in the near future. So following that, we've got artist Beto, who perhaps you've been to the Silver Snail recently and have seen those awesome hip-hop inspired Marvel cover mashup t-shirts that they've been selling there. Well, let me tell you, his artist alley table had constant traffic. As I was interviewing him, we got interrupted quite frequently because people were really interested in what he had there, because that nostalgia, you immediately respond to the nostalgia of seeing him perfectly match a hip-hop memory or a hip-hop artist with a very recognizable Marvel cover. I had a lot of fun talking to him. We get into classic hip-hop talk mixed with some comic book talk, and we wax poetic about some of our favorite albums and MCs from the mid-90s. So if you're a hip-hop fan from that era, you're definitely going to love that conversation. And then finally, we ended off by sitting and talking with Kevin Briones, the co-creator of the self-published Neon Black, which currently has two issues out. The art and the storytelling captured my attention. It's a lot of fun. The concept of the book is very intriguing. And talking to Kevin about his intro and where his love for comics developed really was one of those things that I'll remember from this Fan Expo. It was one of my favorite moments, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it. I hope you do. So remember to check us out on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher, Cave of Solitude, Facebook. Throw us a follow, like the page, and send us an email at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. We love hearing from fans or listeners of the show, getting some feedback from them. I'm having a great time doing this. And like I said, it's just a lot of fun to be a part of the comic book community from my city. So without further ado, this is Shane Heron, Ricky Lima, Beto, and Kevin Briones on the Cave of Solitude. Thank you guys so much for listening. Okay, here we are at Fan Expo Day 1. This is Eric Anthony, and I'm standing here with
Shane Heron,
Ricky Lima.
And you guys are the creators of, tell us the book,
Black Hole Hunters Club.
And tell me how this team came together, because I hear you guys together on different podcasts or starring in episodes yourself. Tell us a little bit about how this team came together.
Yeah, so me and Shane, we met at the 24-hour comic jam. No, it was the Deep Sea, or the Halloween Comic Fest in Stadium Comics. And then we actually started talking at the 24-hour comic jam. And Shane's like, oh, yeah, you want to do something together? And I was like, yes. So he sent me a bunch of art that he had for, like, his, like, characters. And then that was just a Black Hole Hunters Club. And then we were thinking about, instead of having, like, humans hunting aliens, it'd be, like, aliens hunting humans. And then that's kind of where the first issue came. And then we sold, like, 100 copies in our first show. And I was like, oh, my God. So then we just kind of continued it from there.
So the concept of the aliens hunting humans, was that something you both joined together to come up with, the character designs, and then you just built it from there?
No. The original plan was, it was a story idea I had years and years ago, and it was this alien that comes to Earth, and he tries to turn into like a superhero, but he still looks like a big monster, and he tries saving people and everyone like hates him. So it was an idea I didn't really know what to do with or how to do it, and I was like, should I be serious with it? Should I do like almost like comically like The Tick or something? So then I just kind of put it on the shelf, and then when Ricky and I were talking about doing something, I was like, hey, what do you think about this idea? And then he kind of took that idea and morphed it into what became the Black Hole Hunters Club. So Ricky kind of came up with the whole idea of like the aliens bounty hunting humans.
Awesome. So was it always the dream for you guys to be comic creators growing up as kids? Did you know you wanted to be a writer and an artist, or did you both have intentions of being a writer, artist?
Yeah, I think even when I was growing up, really like writing, the comic writing seemed like the most fun. So then that's why I kind of started doing that. Whereas like all the other writing, like prose writing, you have to do like, oh, and then he goes to the car and you're like, yeah, it's boring stuff. So I really wanted just to as succinct as possible. And comics is like way, way faster than movies, like writing scripts and stuff. So I really just kind of fell into comics that way. Yeah.
How about you?
I think ever since like grade five, when I got into, I think it was like Death of Superman came out that time.
Right.
I was like heavy into comics, and I was like, I'm going to be a comic book artist. And then I didn't make my first comic till I was like 25, because I was like, I was just like partying and having fun.
Of
and
course.
Like, I just wasn't focused at all. So then it wasn't until like, yeah, I became, when I was 25, a couple of friends were like, because I had all these ideas for comics that I just wasn't doing. And I was like, I'll get to it. And then I had some guys be like, you need to do comics, like actually start making them. And I was like, okay, I'll make the comics. And then I booked a show, the Paradise Comic Con 2007 was my first show as an artist. Right. And I was like, I got to make a book now because I have a table at a show. And then I started making it from there.
Been doing it for 10 years, eh?
Yeah.
Wow.
So what was it like going from being a fan at these cons, and now you got at every show you guys have a mainstay table, people know you guys, they've read your books. What's it like now being on the other side of the table?
It's different in the sense that, I don't know, I'm kind of like bored of shows. I always keep telling everyone it's kind of like staying in a hotel. Like they all seem the same, and like we do the March show in Toronto, we do the Fan Expo every year, we've been doing it for years, and then we do all these other ones, we do like Sarnia, Niagara Falls, Montreal. It just like you see the same people over and over again, and like people get so excited, and I'm like, it feels like the same show over and over again. And like it's fun to sell your books and make new books to have at the shows, but it's like, I think people think it's a lot of fun, but it's like work, because
you're
on and you're selling, and then you go out after and you like you're like you're just going out and drinking beers, but like you're kind of networking and you kind of got to behave yourself. Like I don't go out and get drunk with the comic guys like I would with my friends, you know what I mean? Like So it's you're kind of on the whole time. So if you have a weekend, if you work full time and then you have a weekend at a con, it's like having no days off really. So It's really not as fun as everyone makes it sound.
Yeah, it's fun for the people coming here who can walk around, but you guys got to try to sell your book.
I think that being said though, I don't think I would not do it though. I don't know about Shane, but I love doing cons, just kind of like meeting the people and selling the books. And like I'd love having people like pick up the book and like really reading it and enjoying it. So as much work as it is, I'd still be doing it.
Awesome. So what were some of your inspirations that affect the work that you make now? I've heard on some other episodes you've been on, Shane, you're a big fan of Westerns.
Oh yeah.
So that's influencing some of the stuff you're going to be working on. And how about you, Ricky? What were the kind of things you liked reading growing up?
I think a lot of stuff that influenced me was like a lot of like bad media. You know what I mean? Like I like to watch like not necessarily like B movies, but like C movies, or like I like watching like amateur like high school plays, because I mean they have good intentions. It's just there's just something wrong to it. So then you could be like, okay, what would I do differently? And then you could start thinking about what you do differently. And it's kind of more, I get more inspired by watching bad stuff and reading bad work than I do good stuff. You know, good stuff, I'm like, well, I'll never be able to do that. It's amazing. But bad stuff, I'm like, I could do better than that.
That's true. So you take the bad movie, look at it, how could I make this better? So I have a question then. And considering the type of book you guys have collaborated on together, my wife is a big fan of a specific B movie named Critters. Were you a fan of Critters? And that did that sort of, you know, when you watch a movie like that, it kind of has the same hunting for humans type of thing.
Yeah, I've never heard of Critters.
You've never watched Critters?
What's it about?
So it's kind of like, have you seen it, Shane?
No, I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
Okay. I think it's right up your alley if that's the kind of stuff you grew up reading. It's these little furball aliens that come, I forget the planet that they're from, and then these two anamorphic aliens come after them to hunt them. And it's kind of like a really cheesy version of Gremlins in a small town. And it's like a rated R version of it.
Nice.
And so, but it's so cheesy. It's so bad. But my wife absolutely loves it. So it made, when you mentioned that, it made me think of that movie.
Totally. And I bet she loves it because it's like, it's so honest. And they're really trying hard.
They are. It's not, trying so hard.
Yeah. But I mean, but it's just not working for some reason. It's hilarious.
A funny trivia thing with that, with Critters, it was Leonardo DiCaprio's first silver screen debut.
Oh,
imagine.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that around the time he was on, like, Growing Pains?
I think just around that time, yeah. So how about you, Shane? Tell us about Morris. I'm seeing all these Facebook feeds, all of these awesome pinups that are coming through, and it seems like it's really ramping and building up. Tell us a little bit about the book.
So Morris is a character I came up with about 5 years ago now, and it was supposed to be just a series of illustrations of this big, fat sheriff cowboy guy doing just different crazy stuff. And then at some point, like, people, I did, I think, a few prints of it, and people really responded really well to the character design. And so at some point, I was just like, my next book has to be Morris. And so now I'm actually finally doing it. And it's a Western set in sort of a, I want it to feel mostly like a Western town, like a regular kind of cowboy movie. But it's in a post-apocalyptic world where outside of this town is, like, chaos and anarchy. But everyone's kept safe by Morris in this town, and it's just tales like about the town. Basically, the town's called Beatrice.
Okay.
Sorry. How does your work with Black Hole Hunters Club? How has it affected what you're doing with Morris now?
I like it.
How's my? What does he mean?
We've been publishing Black Hole Hunters Club for like 4 years now, and now you're coming out with Morris. Have you learned things from Black Hole Hunters Club that you're applying to Morris?
Yeah, I don't know. I just became a better artist. I don't know.
Cool.
I know that it's delayed Morris because I was supposed to do Morris before Black Hole Hunters. So it's made it take longer. I don't know. We got 8 issues of Black Hole Hunters Club and a bunch of other stuff. So, I mean, I've just done a lot more comics, so I've become a better creator because of that, right? Like, the only way to get better is to actually just keep doing it and learn from your mistakes. So, issue 1 of Black Hole Hunters is not nearly as good as the newest issue that we have out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess you just improve by doing it, right?
Good answer. Good.
Are you going to be, Ricky, are you going to be writing any portions of Morris? Has he asked you to jump on for a couple of miniseries?
Yeah, Shane's asked people to do, like, kind of, like, one-offs and
right?
stuff and, like, single issues. But Shane's, like, a harsh critic, so we'll see. I don't know. I'm going to pitch some stuff to him, but we'll see. I don't know.
The idea with Morris is I always say I want to do, like, the Hellboy model where I do sort of, like, a miniseries, like, 4-6 issues, and that's one story arc, and then collect it. And I want them to be able to be, like, read that independent of each other. You don't have to read them in, like, so you just go, like, I want to read this story.
So it's continuity is not going to be necessary. Like,
yeah, like, maybe a little bit, but you shouldn't have to feel that you didn't read this other trade, so you can't read that one. I want anyone to be able to pick it up.
Right.
And part of that is I want to build this world of Morris, and I want to work with guys like Ricky and a few other artists I know, writers that I know, that I've been meaning to work with, and I want them to read a bit of Morris, and then I want them to go, okay, this is my idea for a story arc, and then we'll work on that together, kind of, and write different story arcs with different writers. So, because there's so many writers I want to work with, this is a good way to do it, I guess.
So kind of like make it an anthology with complete miniseries within it, but when you have all the books, you get a little taste of all these different writers that you get to work with.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean also. There's writers that I want to work with, say like Ricky or like my buddy Aaron Feldman, who I think are great writers, but they may not have what I want from Morris, right? So
right.
Like, I want to sit down with them, see what they got, and realistically, it might be great. It might not be right, you know what I mean? So then I'm just going to kind of pick and choose. And I mean, I got to draw these, so it's like, it's not like I can do 10 stories in a year, right? I want to do like, you know, probably it would be like 1 4-6 issue arc per year, which you get like 1 trade a year basically. So it's like once a year I get to work with a different writer.
Right. That's a good goal.
Yeah, something like that.
Awesome. So, Ricky, other than Black Hole Hunters, do you have any other books on the go?
Yeah, we just kickstarted a book called Happily Ever After. It's about a princess who gets kidnapped and then uses a dating app to find knights to come and rescue her. So that one was on Kickstarter in June, and it was successfully funded, so now we're going to produce it and, like, sell it and stuff. And that one's really fun. It's super cool. And I'm sure there'll be other ones I come up with after, but for now, that's, like, the main one I'm working on.
That's awesome, guys. Okay, one last question, because I know Martin Slam Duncan asked this to all of our guests. He always asks, what's your favorite donut?
Sorry, what's my favorite?
Donut.
Donut? I don't even like donuts that much. Like, I think donuts are overrated.
Right?
No, yeah.
I know most people disagree.
Because I think, like, I'll eat a donut because someone usually brings, like, a dozen to something. But I don't think I ever go and just buy a donut on my own.
Never makes you feel better after you've had it, right?
No, you always feel like you always regret a donut. You never feel good about it. So I'll say Boston cream.
That's the most popular one. That's the one we get all the time.
It's not that good. Because the Boston cream is not that good, the cream inside. But
the custard, right?
Okay, you know what the best donut is? I got my answer.
Tell me.
When I was a kid, my dad would take us to this Italian bakery, and they would do these. They look like Boston creams, but the filling was like whipped cream inside. So it's almost like an eclair. Holy shit, those are good. That's the best donut.
What was the Italian bakery called?
I don't remember the name of it. It was in Scarborough near, like, Markham and Lawrence. And it was, like, my dad would take us to the Italian bakery and buy, like, buns and make mortadella sandwiches with them, basically. I don't know the name of
Italian
it.
Italian bakeries are the best.
Yeah, they are the best.
For me, it's sour cream glazed donuts. Those are,
I'm a fan of those,
because they're,
too.
Like, they're dense.
Yeah.
But then they're, like, glazed, and so it's nice. And you just feel good eating them.
Is it really
Boston cream, but you didn't want to say that because everyone says that?
No, man.
You change your answer?
Boston creams are too, like, they're kind of messy, you know? Because if you eat them and then by the end, it's like all the cream's been pushed to the back. Yeah. And you're like, oh.
What's your favorite donut? Have you answered this before?
It's never been asked to me. Thank you for asking.
You gotta turn it around.
You know what? It all depends where you're going. The only thing you got left at Tim Hortons that I think you can still buy there that you don't want to go to McDonald's for instead of is a donut. So maybe I like the sour cream glazed from Tim Hortons. But if you're going to, like, one of those classic, you know, it still smells like smoke type of donut shops.
Yeah.
They got those chocolate eclairs.
Yeah.
Those are good.
Yeah.
Those old coffee times, and they had the smoking room.
Right?
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it was disgusting.
And their donuts were actually a good size. They weren't like these little bite-sized donuts.
I'm also a huge fan of Krispy Kreme's, just the original Krispy Kreme donuts. It's like you eat them, they just like melt in your mouth.
It like disintegrates.
It's crazy.
It's good.
We have, at my work, these people keep ordering. There's a place called Glory Hole Donuts in Toronto. And they're like the number one donut, like, premium, like, donut place. So they'll have, like, tiramisu donuts and lemon meringue and, like, fancy. And you know what? They're just as good as Tim Hortons ones. It's all the same shit. Donuts are not that good.
So what's your dessert of choice if you have to choose? Are you more of a salt guy or you're more of a sweet tooth guy?
No, I like pies. I make a lot of pies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know if you, like, look at my Instagram. I post all these pies. And I'm, like, a baker by trade.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I like making pies. So I feel like pies should replace donuts and cakes. Because donuts and cakes are overrated.
I'm a pie fan, too. If I had to choose, I'd go pie for dessert with a little scoop of ice cream. That's the best.
Pies are good.
A favorite pie you like to make? What's your specialty?
I like them all. I think I just like a classic apple pie, but I'm at my job, I get to make and try out new ones. Like, right now I'm making a peach pie with this, like, bourbon syrup on it. It's really awesome. So I just like to try different ones. But, like, we were doing strawberry rhubarb, and I didn't think I liked strawberry rhubarb that much, but we came up with this recipe in the summer, and I was like, I really like this strawberry rhubarb pie. It turned out really good. So, I don't know. I'll say strawberry rhubarb.
That's awesome. And for you, how about you, Ricky? We're talking more about pies and comics.
Yeah,
this is great.
Yeah.
I love it.
I don't know. I don't eat too many pies just because, like, I don't know. I don't. But I think apple pie is probably...
It's a classic.
In grade 11, we had a science experiment where you had to make an apple-less apple pie. So it had, like, cream of tartar in it, and it was made with Ritz crackers. And it was so good. Like, I was like, this is amazing.
Apple-less apple pie. What does that even mean?
No, I have no idea. I don't know. But it was a science experiment. It was really good.
was like the best one we ever did.
Science experiment was eat a bunch of Ritz crackers.
You guys are hilarious.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's not a good science experiment at all.
How much arguing goes on in the creation of Black Hole Hunters between
so
you
much.
Two?
So much. Yeah. So it's crazy.
It's actually over like very like big things, like the way stories are going. I'll be like, Ricky, we shouldn't do this, and Ricky's like, yeah, whatever, I don't care.
Yeah.
And then we'll get in an argument over like the name of an alien.
Yeah, names are tough.
Ricky will be like, I want this alien to be named like Vincent. I'll be like, I want him to be named blur 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 blur. Yeah.
Usually we kind of find a good like middle ground. But.
Yeah, that's mostly it. But yeah, we mostly tell each other to like piss off a lot, but we get along pretty well.
And usually what happens is I'll write a script and then Shane will just change it, and then it's like when it's published, it's like I'll read it and I'll be like, whoa, this is a lot different than I remember it. But that's cool.
Yeah, but that's the fun of doing your own comic, right? You got that freedom to work together.
Ricky's good because I've worked with writers, and I think a lot of writers, they're very, like protective of their work and any changes.
Yeah.
And Ricky, I think half the time with the changes, I used to, like, okay it with him. And I think he would, like, he didn't even remember half the time what he wrote, so he was like, yeah, whatever. And I think he got to a point where he just trusts me, so I change stuff now without telling him, and he's just like, yeah, it's cool. I like it.
Because, like, so at the end of the day, like, if you're really protective of your stuff's gonna turn out like garbage, you know what I mean?
Right.
If you can get other ideas infused into yours, it's gonna make it, like, try baking an apple pie with one ingredient. It's not gonna work.
Ritz crackers.
You know, right?
It's true. That's what makes, I think, comic book, the medium of storytelling so interesting, because you've got the idea of the writer who's got this vision of his own, but when the artist gets his hands on it, he can do things that the writer didn't think about, that it's two ideas fusing together, right?
Yeah. And it's also like, if you watch a movie or a television show, like, there's so many different hands in that.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you do a comic book, you get like the two creative, like mainly like your artist and your writer, and then whatever colorist, letters, all the other guys. But you get such a clearer vision of like what that writer wanted to do.
Yeah, right.
Instead of like a million different people and executive producers being like, put a giant spider in it or something, you know? Like,
yeah.
And you're like, that doesn't fit at all, but you have to do it because they're funding it, you know?
The
what
Kevin
mean? So,
Smith story.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think it's better. Like, that's the fun. I think that's why someone like Kevin Smith, who for a long time did his success in film, came back to comics, and people always have a soft spot in their heart for comics.
Yeah.
And even though like most people don't make money at comics, everyone wants to do it because it's so pure, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Anything it's great. I love it.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for giving me some of your time. I'd like to get you guys on the show for like a more extensive conversation, because you guys are so much fun to talk to. We'll talk about pies, we'll talk about burgers, we'll talk about wrestling, whatever you guys want to talk about.
Yeah. Well, thanks, buddy.
All right, man. Take care, guys. Okay, and we are back at Fan Expo on day one. It's Thursday, and I'm here with an extraordinary artist by the name of Beto. Now, Beto, I've seen your art every time I come through Artist Alley. Now I'm seeing the t-shirts. I'm a huge fan of them. Could you please describe your art style to us and a little bit of your love of hip-hop?
Well, basically, to describe my art style, I would say a combination of science fiction, comic books, a lot of hip-hop music, Afrofuturism, Black history. There's all kind of different influences that go into it, so I just mix everything together.
That's awesome. And what I love is you take some of the most classic looking comic book covers and you adapt it to very, very legendary hip-hop artists. So how do you decide which artist gets which cover to associate with a certain character?
Well, I'm a big comic book collector. I've been collecting comics since I was a little kid, so I have an extensive collection. I know all the classic covers, all of the classic superheroes, so I just try and look for a match that works.
Right.
I'm a big fan of the artist, so I try to use artists that I already like and admire.
Okay.
And pair them with the hip-hop artists that I like and admire as well, so.
Awesome.
I just try and find something that fits.
Awesome. So where did the love of comic books come from for you?
Just growing up as a kid, you know, going to the corner store.
Spinner rack.
Good old spinner rack before.
Oh, shit. It's a big one. Thank you.
Yeah, good old spinner rack, you know, before the comic shops, and yeah, just started from there.
Did you have, based upon the art that you have and the t-shirts you got printed, you seem to be leaning towards the Marvel side. Is that an accurate assessment?
That would be accurate, yes.
What was it about Marvel more than DC at the time for you as a kid?
I always collected Marvel.
Right.
I was big into X-Men.
Okay.
So that just kept me gravitating toward Marvel. And I started reading a lot of different Marvel comics. Really, for DC, I only mess with Batman. That's it.
So, that's a lot of people's story. They're Marvel fans, so, yeah. And then Batman.
And then there's Batman.
And then there's Batman,
so.
Right.
I don't know. I've just always been into Marvel more. I just like the heroes, the stories, a little more in-depth to me, a little more relatable to me.
Yeah, the characters were designed to be that way.
Yes.
So
did you?
Good.
So, X-Men, what was it about the X-Men that appealed to you specifically?
That's actually the original for that piece.
No problem. I was saying about the X-Men. What was it about the X-Men that appealed to you?
For one, it was hard to find.
Okay.
I had to find issues, so, you know, when you got one, it was... I'm going way back right now, but when you got one, it was, like, something big.
Was it, like, the Claremont, John Byrne
original,
X-Men?
Yeah, Uncanny X-Men. So,
Eric B.
You could always see, like, Avengers everywhere,
Hulk,
Spider-Man, but when you saw an X-Men comic, it was a little something different. At least back in those days, it was.
Right.
So... I had to, like, raid my friend's collection for his X-Men and, you know, started from there.
And you never, it wasn't something that you ever grew out of. It was something that you just maintained the love for.
I always read comics.
Yeah.
I always read comics, graphic novels, try and do a little writing myself. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, hopefully one day I'll have something to put out there as well.
That's awesome. So now on the flip side of it, the hip-hop side.
Method Man. That's
Method Man?
Yeah.
We just got some people at the booth here with Beto that are intrigued by the art as much as I am, so pay no mind to the interruption, folks. This is live. We've got a jam piece here with every hip-hop artist you can... Every classic hip-hop artist you can remember growing up in the 90s. It's a beautiful piece. And it's an awesome t-shirt.
That's Master Killer. Genius.
Nobody's. All right, let's continue here. We got a busy booth because everybody's loving the nostalgia of the comics with the hip hop fusion from Beto over here. So, getting into the hip hop aspect of it all. Growing up, I was a comic book fan. I grew out of it, and hip hop became that replacement. But I found that hip hop and comic books, to me, there is some sort of a similarity to them. Would you agree with that?
Yes, there's always a fusion between comic books and hip-hop. You'll find, I wouldn't say most, but many hip-hop artists are actually comic fans, too.
Right?
You hear them making references in their lyrics, and it kind of goes back and forth, right? So there's definitely a connection between the two.
Yeah, I think there's, in the creative process of it as well, because when I was growing up, I was always interested in not just the MC, but who the producer of the track was. And I found like with comic books, it had that similar aspect of there's a writer, and then you got the artist who's giving you the landscape of it. And very rarely do you have one guy who does it all. I mean, you got your few that do it, but sometimes if you have a guy who's a great MC and also a producer, one outweighs the other. Do you know what I'm saying? So that fusion between hip-hop and comic books has always appealed to me. Okay, so getting back to our hip-hop discussion, what era of hip-hop, based on the music I'm hearing, I kind of have an idea, but what was your earliest memories of hip-hop that you remember falling in love with?
Earliest memories of hip-hop will go all the way back to some of the early Sugar Hill Gang records, of the Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, like stuff you hear your parents listening to,
Right, right, okay.
So, but my era, where I was fully immersed in hip-hop music, was the 90s.
The golden era.
The golden era of hip-hop. That is the time when we would listen to hip-hop all day, basically. You know, exchange tapes, exchange CDs, learn the whole album back-to-back.
Right.
So, yeah.
I agree. I mean, I was a little bit later 90s, because of my age, but that entire decade, as you go through that entire decade, everything about it was practically classic when you look back at it now. What were some of your favorite artists, favorite albums, stuff that you remember, like those albums that you lived with?
I will tell you that when Mobb Deep released Hell on Earth.
Okay, 96, right?
It must have been around 96, you're probably right. And that was one album that I played on heavy rotation. Of course, Ready to Die, Biggie Smalls.
Okay.
Was a very big album when I was coming up.
Yeah, I was a huge Biggie fan myself.
Raekwon and Ghostface.
Okay.
Only Built for Cuban Links.
Yeah.
I had the purple tape.
Yeah, a lot of people. A lot of people have that nostalgia for the purple
classic,
tape.
Classic. So.
That was one of the albums that I missed out on when I got into hip hop.
Okay.
It I knew that it had its, it was a landmark album, but I got into my Ghostface memory is Supreme Clientele. Big fan of Supreme Clientele.
Also another great album. Supreme
yeah.
Clientele.
Yeah. That I for me I feel like Ghostface is the. My favorite MC from Wu-Tang Clan, the most prolific, the most consistent. A lot of guys had that moment where they were shining, but they never had that continuity going for them. How about for you? Which was your favorite Wu-Tang member?
Ah.
That's a tough one.
It is very tough. Ghostface is one of them, but you said that, so I'll say Raekwon as
Raekwon.
Well.
Raekwon, yeah. What was it about? What was it about Cuban Lynx that got you? Was it the RZA production, the slang
it
that
was
they
really
created?
The synergy between Ghostface and Raekwon.
Yeah.
The fact that he said, this is my solo album, but I'm bringing my Wu-Tang brother on, not just on one or two tracks,
no.
But on the whole album.
It was like a group.
Featuring Ghostface, right?
Yeah. So, that was a beautiful thing.
It was a crazy album. Crazy.
And when you, like, I was just saying to my wife the other day, Tribe Called Quest, Midnight Marauders and Enter the 36 Chambers from Wu-Tang Clan were released on the same day back in those times. And you just look at a year's worth of hip-hop, any of those years, and it's incredible the type of albums that were coming out. Who were your favorite MCs during that era? I mean, it's prolific. There's a lot to choose from, but who are your favorite?
Definitely.
Yeah, we were top five MCs. Can you pick five? Oh, who are your favorite in the 90s? Because that thing changes all the time, right? Depending on what they've done lately. So who are your top five in the 90s?
In the 90s...
Who defined it for you?
I'll always put up Nas.
Yeah, absolutely have to.
Biggie Smalls.
Okay.
Rakim.
Okay, yeah.
Gonna throw a female in there, Lauryn Hill.
All right.
Not a great body of work, but a great lyricist.
Yeah, I have that debate with people. I love Lauryn Hill, but I always felt like she was a little overrated because the body of work wasn't extensive. So she got rated high. But I was always like, there's a couple people she's edging out that deserve to be there.
Oh, yeah. It's always tough. And fifth one. And go Sean Price.
Sean Price, nice. That's a deep cut.
Yeah, it's probably later 90s.
Yeah.
Boot Camp.
Right,
he was coming out with Helter Skelter.
Okay.
And really hit the underground as a solo artist after.
Yeah,
after
later on.
Helter Skelter, but definitely one of my top lyricists.
Nice. Yeah. So if you could take those five that you mentioned and you could... Who would be their counter superhero? If they were a superhero, who would they be? In either the Marvel or DC universe.
Wow.
Keep the fusion going.
Okay. What did I say? Nas?
You said Nas, yeah.
Well, Lauryn Hill, let's give her to Phoenix because
okay.
I did one mashup of her already.
Yeah, that goes.
What's going on, man?
What's up, man?
All right. Nas, I'm going to say Spider-Man.
I like it.
Verbal dexterity.
Yeah, I like it. That's good.
Sean Price, for some reason, I'm going to say the Hulk.
Yeah, that fits. That fits.
Just a powerhouse.
Yeah.
Right?
Ruthless, relentless.
Yeah, we'll just
He never comes soft. He never comes soft. Yeah.
Never come easy. Rakim, I'll say Professor X.
You know what? That's a good choice. You know who I would also say for Rakim? Reed Richards. Just because of the
dexterity,
the genius of him.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah.
Like
similar to Professor X.
Yeah, yeah. Just that teacher.
Very mental.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I caught on to Rakim later on, because when you're a teenager, you're always with what's hot, right? Hip hop was one of those things where if it was 2 years old, it was ancient. So when I was growing up, Rakim was already, you know, way past my time. But if it wasn't, when I listened to him, if it wasn't for what he did, you wouldn't have gotten Nas or any of the guys that I liked growing up.
Exactly.
So Rakim would be Professor Xavier. You got the Hulk and Sean Price.
Yes.
Nas is Spider-Man, that's a great choice because I love both of those guys.
Yes.
And now Biggie.
I said Phoenix.
Phoenix, and now we got Biggie.
Biggie Smalls.
Is in your mind, is he the greatest of all time? A lot of people just put him there and you can't touch him.
It's debatable.
Yeah.
And I only say that due to the body of work.
Yeah, it's subjective, of course.
Right? I mean, he was cut short right in his prime. Not even in his prime.
He hadn't even
reached his prime.
Not
yet,
even,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, if you're talking about an MC who's only put out 2 studio albums.
Yeah. Both classic.
Both humongous classics.
Both game defining.
Yes.
And I think, you know what? Puff Daddy should get a lot of credit for what Biggie Smalls became. I don't think sometimes people recognize the genius behind it, but you're right. Body of work is shortened.
Body of work is small, right? That being said, the lyrics speak for itself, right? And the whole concept behind the 2 albums, I mean.
Yeah. They're like movies.
Yeah.
Huge scope.
Greatest of all time? I don't know about that.
Yeah, I used to feel that way once upon a time, but I feel that I don't think there's a point now to label one guy.
No.
Because you don't get everything from one guy.
Exactly.
As I've gotten older, I found that I have a little bit of a softer spot for Nas. Like, I'll always lean towards him over some of the guys who I loved as a kid, because I feel like his content I can still appreciate, whereas some of Biggie's content I kind of outgrew. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't want to play this in front of children.
Definitely. To be honest, that's one of the reasons why Rakim is one of my top MCs.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a lot of appreciation for him.
You know Rakim never swore on wax?
No, you're right. Until his later record. Later records.
Possibly. But I believe he did a record with, was it Dr. Dre or...
I think on the... But you're right.
He had a record called The R really late in his career. Like after he'd been out for like 5-7 years.
But you're right. He never... Eric B. and Rakim, it was amazing.
It was all lyrics. Like clean, jazzy beats. You know?
I rate a guy higher for that. Like a guy like Lupe Fiasco, I always rated him higher for the fact that he never had to swear.
Right.
Whereas some guys, I felt like they used it as a crutch to fill in the syllables.
Right. Definitely.
That's a good point. So Biggie, who would he be? I would say Kingpin, but that's too obvious.
You'd say who?
Kingpin, but that'd be too obvious.
That'd be too obvious, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe the Punisher.
The Punisher?
The Punisher. He has that very violent, lyrical flow, subject matter. I'm going Punisher.
That'd still be a vicious team. You got the Phoenix, you got the Punisher, you got Spider-Man, Professor X calling the shots, and the Incredible Hulk.
What's Marvel doing?
Like, that's the team right there.
Team together.
And then you can make the hip-hop variant. Comic cover.
Exactly.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time. You're a busy man.
Yes.
I appreciate you giving me your time to talk. Hopefully we can get back together and do a little bit more extensive hip-hop comic book talk, because that's right up my alley.
For sure. Let's do it again, man. We'll do it next time.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, dude. Okay, this is Eric Anthony, day 3 of Fan Expo Toronto 2017. We are sitting here with Kevin Briones, the creator of Neon Black, or the co-creator of Neon Black. Thank you, Kevin, for spending some time with us.
Hey, thanks a lot. It's great to be here.
So I'm walking by your booth, and I see this striking image of the cover of Neon Black, and I wanted to stop and take a look at what you guys are working on. We were in the morning, neither of you were here yet, but I was flipping through the sketchbooks and the comic books. Beautiful book. Can you tell me a little bit about what Neon Black is?
Well, Neon Black is a story about a girl who finds out that her real parents are supervillains, and her adopted parents are the superheroes that kidnapped her when she was young. So it's going to be playing around with a lot of concepts of good and evil, what causes good people to do bad things and
right.
bad people to do good things.
Fantastic. That sounds really interesting. What was there any place of inspiration that it came from for you guys?
It's the story itself is almost like the last chapter of a bigger storyline that's been going along that's been incorporating characters that I've created like since I was a little kid.
Okay, so this is, are you telling the story from the back portion of it to the front, or is there already series in regard to these characters?
Well, it's, I'm sorry, what was the question?
Sorry. So is this is the first part of the story that you guys are releasing? Is there already a series ahead of these ones?
It's actually the latest chapter in an evolving storyline.
Okay.
So it's like pretty much everything that I created when I was a kid, little kid, was it was like backstory to what's happening right now, you know?
Okay, yeah, I got you.
So you know how like when you're watching like Game of Thrones,
okay,
you see what's happening to like Jon Snow, but you still have this whole a whole family tree of what's happening. You know what I mean?
So it's like this is a world building thing of a lot of things that we're going to be introduced to as we go on in the story.
Yeah, and then what we have for Neon Black, like present day, like this is our story.
Okay, got you. So what kind of stuff did you grow up reading? What was your point of entry, I guess, into the comic book medium and that point of no return where you knew that this was something that you wanted to be completely involved with?
I always knew that I wanted to be in comics. Since I was a little kid, like back in the day where you could get comics from like the convenience store, just on the spinner rack.
Yeah.
Or even, what was the store back then? It's like,
was it a direct market store or just a convenience store?
Or not even a convenience store. It's like, you know, when you go to like Kmart at the time.
Right. Yeah.
Towers. Even.
Yes.
And they have like those three packs of like, here's three random comics.
Yeah.
For like 99 cents.
Right.
Whatever, right. So what was that? And I get like getting those and like my parents would get me those and kind of, you know, every now and then just bring some home on their way back from like the grocery store or whatever. And there's like three new comics I can, you know, explore and try and figure out, you know?
Yeah, I had the same experience. Going to the variety store was exciting because the possibility that you might be able to pick a comic from that spinner rack.
Yeah.
Did you have a preference growing up of like a whether it was Marvel, DC, or certain characters that you were drawn towards? Or did your parents just pick up comics that, oh, he might like that one?
Well, at first, like, they would just, like, pick up comics, like, or pick up a pack as, you know, just when they were coming home from the store, the grocery store. But it wasn't until, you know, my dad took me to an actual, like, comic book store till I realized, like, oh, I could decide, like, this, you know, I could get specifically this or get specifically this.
Right.
You know? And then, yeah, you know, from there, it's just, like, you know, I had,
these guys need you for a second. We're just getting some fans coming to the table to get signatures right now. Stick with us. Wasn't sure what color. No problem. So you're talking about hitting the comic book store. Your dad took you to the comic book store the first time, and you saw that there's a whole world of options that you can go to now. So was there anything that you were drawn to, or were you so overwhelmed with all of the options that you just wanted a little bit of everything?
It was a bit of like a lot of being overwhelmed just because, you know, I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah, where do you start?
Being a kid in a toy store.
Yeah, right?
And then actually like an interesting part two to that was as soon as my dad realized that
you know, I was getting into comic books and really, really enjoying comic books. He made a quick call to his home back in the Philippines to one of his sisters who had his comic book collection there.
Oh, so your dad was a comic book collector himself.
Yeah, and then he didn't, you know, but he never really... He never really, I guess, like, pushed it on me or anything, but he was like, oh, what do you think of this?
Oh,
okay. Here's this, or I got this for you. You know what I mean?
So were his comics from the Philippines, were they, like, Marvel, DC stuff?
Oh, yeah.
They were in English, too?
Yeah, they were, like, original, like, Neil Adams, Green Lantern, Green Arrow.
That's amazing.
The Tales of Asgard before it was even Thor.
Seriously?
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. So
yeah,
when he got those sent over, which were the ones that you were just like, oh my goodness, look at this artwork.
Oh, it was all of those, right? Yeah, yeah. And then yeah, like the Thor, because that was the one that he collected the most of.
Okay.
You know, and I kind of like got into that, and I was kind of like my eye opener, right?
That was the Kirby, Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, Tales of Asgard.
Yeah.
Were those the backup stories that they were doing within, was it Tales to Astonish?
I believe so.
And they were like showing the world building of Asgard. I hear really good things about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And I just, you know, even back then, I was just like looking at the art and, you know, just enjoying like that this is a thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
So when did you pick up the pencil now to want to start penciling and drawing your own books?
Now, I've always, you know, always drawn since I was a kid, as, you know, probably 90% of Artist Alley would tell you.
Right.
But again, my dad was a huge inspiration in my life, still is. And, like, he was an artist, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he just kind of, but it's more of a hobby for him.
He had the skills.
Like he had the skills.
The abilities, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then again, after he saw, you know, it's almost like he introduced the comic world to me in stages.
Right.
Because, you know, he brought comics home from the store, and then he took me to a comic book store. Then he showed me his collection. After that, he showed me his comic book.
So he made his own comic book.
He made his own comic book. It was just all in ballpoint pen.
Oh, wow.
And it was, it was all in ballpoint pen, and it was all in, like, a school notebook, because he did it while he was in college.
That's great.
And I tell you, like, the art in it, like, no bias at all. It was that, kind of that... almost that Walter Simonson era kind of art.
That Thor style?
Yeah. You know, and like when you look at it, you're just like, my dad did this?
With a ballpoint pen. There's no inking.
I couldn't see any like pencil lines or anything like that.
That's crazy.
You know, and it was like, you know, it's like, just teach me now, you know?
So how does he feel knowing that you're now fully immersed within, you know, the comic book medium and making your own comic, having a booth at Fan Expo? How does it make him feel?
Oh, he loves it. He loves it. You know, he loves that, you know, that I do it. And, you know, one of my dreams is to be able to get him to, like, come here. Yeah. You know, join me behind the table.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, to kind of, you know, just be a part of it, right? Because, like, he was, you know, he's...
Unfinished work.
He's kind of the reason why I'm here, you know?
Yeah, that's great.
But he's more intimidated by it now, where he's kind of like, oh, no, people, they won't like my art.
Oh, no.
You know, but I'm like, you have no idea, you know?
Yeah, well, if it looks like Walter Simonson,
yeah,
the ballpoint pen.
Oh, yeah. You know,
so did you and your dad ever come to cons when you were growing up? Were they around in Toronto at the time?
No, not at the time.
It seems more like it's in the zeitgeist of pop culture now, where going to Comic Con or Fan Expo is the thing to do. But I don't remember hearing too much about them when I was growing up.
Yeah, no, not at all. I think the first one that I went to was.
That's just a work in progress.
Maybe like the first time Original. Jim Lee came here, which would have been 2011, maybe?
Okay.
You know, yeah.
So that was your first time coming to Fan Expo?
To any convention.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
So when did you and your partner is it Pat, right? No, Paul.
Oh, Paul.
Paul,
yeah.
That's right. He's the co-creator with you on the book.
Yeah, well, he helped out with the other art.
Right.
Like the flashback scenes.
I really like that aspect of the book.
It's amazing.
How do you guys plan that out, speaking of the layouts of the book and how you have the art that's the current storyline and the present, and he goes with the flashback with that kind of painted style?
Yeah.
How do you guys map that out in organizing the book?
I mean, it all comes into, like, you know, comes into, like, story and how that comes into play, right? And, yeah, it's like, what I like to do as the writer is I like to try and mirror certain ideas. Okay. So if something's happening in present day, I kind of want something, some event, whether it's something that someone says or something that someone does, that's mirrored kind of like in the past.
Okay.
The action that kind of like links it all together, but at the same time, when you're looking at the two distinct art styles, you know that this is happening, you know, in the past. Yeah,
got you. So is it kind of a way to show that there's a link to these people's behavior of something they may have done in the past that's mirroring what it is that's taking place now in order for it to make sense as far as the decisions they're making?
Partially, there's parts of it that are expositional.
Okay.
But other parts that are just kind of filling in the reader with just like other aspects of the storyline, right?
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So is this now become, because the work is, the issues that you guys have on the table look phenomenal.
Yeah.
So is this a full-time pursuit now, or are you guys still having to keep your day job and doing this in your free time in order to just maintain, you know, living, right? So how do you keep it organized?
Well, for us, we just kind of like chip away at it where we can.
Right.
You know, I've got a day job.
Right.
Does
it have anything to do with art or graphic design or something related to that?
Yep. I'm in graphic design.
Okay.
And so it's still a very creative field, but it's more, you know, it's actually motion graphic design.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So one of the reasons why I decided to go traditional is, you know, after spending like 8 to 10 hours in front of a computer screen, last thing I want to do when I go home is sit at the computer screen some more, right?
Some people have said that drawing to traditional style, when they did the switch to digital, has allowed them to be quicker with the digital. Do you find that true for yourself, or do you? What are the benefits of being digital and going traditional?
Being digital and going traditional?
Well, you say that you work every day on a computer screen, right? And now when you go home and you do this in a traditional way, other than it being something different from what you do at work, is there a benefit that you gain from doing the comic book traditional style?
I'm not sure. I mean, from a very therapeutic sense.
Okay.
You know, there's something tactile about like putting pencil to paper versus putting stylus to screen, to tablet, you know? Like there's a different feel for when you're working with that, or like when you're working with watercolor and how unpredictable watercolor can be.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Got it.
Just something about it. Yeah, just like the overall like mentality, I guess, with working traditionally versus with digital, which I love in many ways, you know. For traditional, there's no undo.
Yes.
Right?
That was something actually that Michael Cho was saying, that when he works traditional, if there's a mistake made, you can't undo it.
Yep.
So I confused what I was saying before. Doing things in a traditional way sometimes can make you go a little quicker, because if there's an ink splotch that you can't erase, you'll work around it to the point where people can't see that anymore. Whereas with a digital, you can always undo it until you see it get perfect.
Yeah.
Do you find that to be the case as well?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's like, so when you make a mistake, it's up to you as the artist to make it not look like a mistake anymore. You know? Turn that mistake into a happy accident.
Right.
Yeah.
That's great. So back to Neon Black, just before we finish up, what era does the book take place in? Is it its own world? Is there a certain timeline, future?
It's an alternate future.
Okay.
It all takes place on a man-made continent called Atlantis. So kind of to it's going to be revealed in issue 3, but you know what, we, you know, the overall environment is that everyone has like left what they now call the old world, and everyone kind of lives on these little man-made islands that make a huge continent called Atlantis. Yeah.
So this world, there's obviously supervillains, superheroes. Yep. Where did those powers come from? Are they actually humans that have developed powers through, you know, the traditional accident way, or is this something from the outside that has affected the world?
It's, you know, an amalgam of all different things, you know, much like any other, like, comic universe. You know, you have some people who are born with it, some people who acquire it, some people who have, you know, have it forced upon them, you know? So, yeah.
Cool. Now, is there a long-term plan with Neon Black? Is it going to be a 12-issue series, or are you just working away at it, and wherever it takes you guys?
It's, you know, I'm planning on, like, chipping away at it. I do have a 4-issue arc planned. And then after that, you know, try and see where I could take it from there, you know?
Will you place, put it in, like, a little graphic novel for maybe the next show?
Yeah, graphic novel, or, you know, maybe use that as a, you know, a pitch idea for a studio even, you know? So maybe see, you know, where it can go maybe beyond the medium of comic books.
Awesome. And you say you work in motion design, right?
Yep.
So is that, could you eventually take this and make it an animation type of a story?
Yeah. Like, that was what I was thinking about is, you know, with like, you know, I can easily take my panels, turn them into a motion comic. Right. You know?
Well, with this day and age of like digital comics, and everybody's, I don't know about you, I still do it the traditional way. I like the tactile feel of a book. But a lot of people now are preferring the digital comics because of the space factor. But if this is now going to be a motion comic, I mean, a whole new group of people get into reading these books, right?
Yeah, right.
That's awesome. So me and my partner, whenever we interview somebody on our podcast, we always ask him silly questions at the end.
Sure.
And he likes to ask people, I don't know if this would apply to you because you look like you're in great shape, but he always asks people, what's your favorite donut?
My favorite donut?
I should start the podcast with that because it's an icebreaker. Yeah. It makes people get comfortable with each other. But
my favorite is the Krispy Kreme cream-filled donuts.
Is it a Boston cream or is it like, because the Boston cream is like custard, right?
Yeah, no. This is like with the Krispy Kreme. It's pretty much icing.
Yeah.
It's icing.
That's my favorite too.
Yeah.
But usually people are Boston cream fans, but I agree with you.
Yeah. Like, well, Boston cream is a very close second.
It's a close second, but you know what? I prefer the cream-filled stuff.
Here. Yeah.
Silly conversation, but it's awesome. Thank you so much for your time, Kevin.
Hey, man.
I'm going to enjoy reading your book. And how can people find your book? If they are listening to this on the podcast, how can they get a hold of your copy?
I'm going to be putting up a store on my own website, kevinbrionis.com.
Okay.
And then I also have our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/neonblackcomic.
Okay.
Wait, let me just make sure. Yeah, Neon Black Comic. And let's see, and I also have a Store Envy page. If you go to storeenvy.com and do a search for Neon Black.
Awesome. Do you have any Instagram pages or anything like that?
Yeah, I've got my Instagram, and then actually that'll be the best place to, you know, just to PM me. For any questions or even if you have any requests at all. And my Instagram /goman7.com. Or not .com, just goman7.
Goman7 on Instagram. Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, buddy.
All right, man. Cheers. Thanks.
Thank you, dude.